En kaart 6, 0, kaart 0, kaart 6, 0, kaart 0, 6, 7, 0, 2, 8, 6, 7, 0, 2, 8, 6, 0, 9, 8, 4, 6, 0, 9, 8, 4, 6.
disguised as renewed faith. Monuments are built with pressure. Isn't that how heroes are made? Did you come for business or pleasure? Do you come when you see me?
Insomnia Stream, Jew Behind the Mask edition. I guess should probably fix this a little bit. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. I'm your host, of course. I'll do this. I'm your host, Devin Stack. This is not about the weird mask allegations on Twitter, by the way. The that military guy that legit looks like he's wearing a mask. I don't know what it is. It looks weird, though. It does look weird. I don't know if you, I'm sure you guys have seen it by now, right? I didn't even download it. I just, because it's not about that, but some of you guys might have thought it was about that. It's not about that. By coincidence, we are going to be talking about hyper-realistic masks today. So, totally by coincidence, actually. So I guess we should kind of dive right in a little bit. We had a lot to cover. The story is old. It goes back 20-some-odd years. Well, about 21 years. So we're all going to hop into our time machines and go back to 2005. 2005 in France, to a little bank / post office called La Banque Postale in Paris. Pop that up there. There's a woman there. We'll call her Madame G. Madame G. Madame G was working at the branch, this particular branch of La Banque Postale, or we'll just call it Postale, in France. And the phone rings. She picks it up, and on the other end of the phone is the head of the bank, Jean-Paul Billet. She's very surprised to receive a phone call from the head of the bank, because she'd only met him once in passing, and he was several levels above her. She was like a regional bank manager, and he was like, you know, the bank president. Think of it like that. He seemed very worried. He seemed very worried and very serious. His tone was what she described as very urgent. You see, he explained to her, "You need to help us. You need to help us. We're going to be involved in a secret terrorism investigation." Remember, this is in the wake of 7/7 in the UK. Back in 2005, you had the terrorist attack. Terrorism was very much on the minds of Americans and Europeans. This is obviously post 9/11 as well. You had a lot of Islamic terror going on. With some Israeli fingerprints, depending on how you look at it. But all the same, in terms of the perception of the people, you had a lot of Islamic terror going on all throughout the West. And this bank president was telling Madame Xi that in order to help fight terrorism, the government has reached out to him and let him know that people funding terrorism were using their bank to send money to terrorists to finance terrorism. And that they would like to have him pass him off to a trusted associate that they could work a sting operation to capture the terrorists. Now, like I said, just 3 weeks prior, on the news, they were saying four suicide bombers linked to Al-Qaeda had blown themselves up in central London, killing 52 people and injuring 700. You had photographs and news footage, bloody, burned commuters staggering from the underground. She was told that the intelligence officer by the name of Paul would contact her soon. She hung up the phone. She was very, very simultaneously afraid and titillated by this idea. And just moments after she hung up, that man that had been mentioned, this Paul from the intelligence agency, called up. He tells her, "Don't worry. We have this under control, but we need your help. And the first thing that you need to understand is operational security. You can't tell anyone. You can't tell your friends. You can't tell your family. You can't tell coworkers, and you can't even tell your immediate boss that we've got the president of your bank looped in. But don't tell anyone else, because we don't know who's involved with this terrorist stuff. Nobody can know what you're up to. Lives are at stake. And don't worry, you'll be watched and protected by our agents. And you are doing your patriotic duty to France. But first things first, we have to get out of official channels. You're going to have to go buy a separate burner phone and call me at this number. You can't be your personal cell phone. You have to go right now, go buy a burner phone." So she goes down and buys a little Nokia or whatever they had in 2005. And this phone, he tells her, it's only to be used with communications between the two of them. She can't use the phone for any other purpose, and that she can't contact him using anything but that phone. She has to keep that phone charged and with her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and she must answer the phone anytime it rings. And it rang a lot. Over the next 2 days, she was called over 42 times by Paul. And Paul gave her all the details of this mission. Paul also seemed to know a lot of personal information about her, which would make sense if he works for the intelligence agencies. He knew obviously where she lived. He knew where her mother lived. A lot of details about her mother. He knew when her father died. He knew that she was a lesbian, and he knew the name of her girlfriend and the names of other people she had associated with. He then asked her, you know, in order for this mission to work properly, to give him a list of all of her wealthiest clients, wealthiest customers, and give the exact balance of their accounts so that he could check it against the data that they had to see if they could find the accounts responsible for funding the terrorism. So she did. She went through and she gave the balances of each of her wealthiest clients. And when she gave the balance of one of the accounts, he said, "That's perfect. That's the match." So now we have to go to phase two of this sting operation that you're a part of. You're going to help me set the trap. He tells her, "You have to withdraw as much cash as possible from all of these accounts." And he lists these different accounts. "Clean them out as much as you can. Don't tell your boss. Don't tell anyone what you're doing there." And once she had completed the withdrawals, she only had 250,000 euros. And this wasn't going to be enough for the mission that Paul had planned. So he said, "I need you to go to the bank vault and try to find some more." So she goes to the bank vault and she's able to wrestle up another 100,000 or so euros. She then places, at Paul's instruction, all 350,000 some odd euros in a large bag. And she is told, "You get that bag, get into a taxi, and go to this cafe. I will call you every 2 minutes and update you on what to do next." She gets in the cab with the 350,000 some odd euros, travels to the cafe, where Paul tells her, "You need to go to a bathroom stall and wait for someone to knock on the bathroom stall. It's one of my agents. They're going to give you a password. And if they give you the correct password, you need to pass that bag to the agent. That agent's going to take the money. We're going to mark the cash. And then wait for my instructions on what to do next." So she goes to the bathroom stall and she waits. After a few minutes, sure enough, someone walks into the bathroom. She hears a female voice give her the password, the agreed upon password, and she passes the bag of money under the stall. The woman takes the bag, unseen, and exits the bathroom. Madame G waits. She is then told, "All right, you need to now go get another cab and go to this cafe that's somewhat nearby. You are to sit down and wait for an agent that will have green eyes. They will give you the bag of money once the bills have been marked." So she goes to the meeting spot and she waits, waiting for the agent with green eyes to appear with the bag of 350 some odd thousand euros. And she waits. And she waits. And she waits some more. Starts to feel like hours are going by. And then she realizes Paul was calling her almost every 2 minutes up until this moment. And now she hasn't received any phone calls from Paul. She starts to believe that she has been scammed. And so she calls a lawyer, a defense lawyer, and heads down to the police station to report what has happened, because she has no communication from Paul. He's not answering the phone, and no agent with green eyes has ever showed up. And she just realized, "I just handed 350,000 some odd euros to someone And now that I'm thinking about this, maybe this was dumb. Maybe this was a dumb idea. Maybe this was not very smart. This is a clip from her lawyer talking about the case, describing kind of the actions once she got to the police station.
Au début, les services de police ne l'ont pas cru. Parce que imaginez...
At first, the police didn't believe that a person of her ranking who works in a bank would hang around with 350,000 euros in cash in the toilets of a bar.
Au début, ils l'ont pensé complice. Mais comme je l'ai
so at first, they thought she was an accomplice, but then the lawyer called them. And also seeing her psychological state, they started to understand that she was innocent. But they were still acting like... making fun, being like, how could she do that? Like, it was ridicule of her to do that.
I can see it now. You dumb fucking dyke. Are you serious? Are you serious? You just listen to some guy on the phone tell you to just get all the money in the bank. Like, every last dollar. Well, euro, I guess. Just get every last euro, put it in a bag, and then just give it to someone, and you were part of some secret agent. This is fucking stupid. So they initially, obviously, yeah, they thought she was in on it, then realized, no, she's just some dumb dyke. And, you know, they made fun of her, of course, because that was fucking retarded.
En fait, ils ont appelé la mère de ma cliente.
The accomplices managed to get intel about her private life by calling her 80-year-old mom and telling her that it was something for a TV show. Like a TV game. And so they learned that she was gay, different like birth dates and stuff like that, that were like really personal. And so when he contacted her, he was able to tell her this stuff, and that made her trust him.
So the reason why they knew all these details about her is the scammers called up her mom saying they were with a game show and wanted to know, you know, fun little details about her daughter. And her stupid mom, the one that raised a lesbian, it was like, oh yeah, here's every detail about my daughter. Her dad died this day, and this is her address, and oh, this is her girlfriend's name, and oh yeah. So that's how she found out that they knew so much about her. So who exactly was responsible for this? Well, this Jew right here, you know, surprise, surprise. This Jew right here, who is credited as being the inventor of what is called now the CEO scam, because it became such a big deal, it is it's now a scam. In fact, it's kind of funny. Indians now attempt to do this kind of scam. This scam is a scam that refuses to die, but it originated with this Jew right here and his girlfriend. Back in 2005, when they decided to take advantage of the high trust society, in these white communities, coupled with their fear of Middle Eastern terrorism, which also a byproduct of the Western involvement with Israel. So, it goes full circle, I guess. There's a documentary we're going to be watching a lot of clips of that's in French that I ran through a AI to dub it into English. It actually did a phenomenal job, so which is great. So we're going to hear a few clips. Basically, I mean, like, you wouldn't know if you weren't looking. There's a couple spots you would notice, but like if you weren't looking at the lips not matching, I don't know how it did such a good job, to be honest. Again, there's a couple places not so great, but overall I was amazed. Anyway, this is his girlfriend, Shirley. They call her Shirley number one. You'll meet Shirley number two in a moment. Shirley number one is the whore girlfriend that helped him develop these initial scams. But Gilbert, we're just going to call him Gilbert, Chicly. In French, it's like Gilbert, who cares? It's Gilbert. Gilbert here was born and raised in France, French Jew. I think his parents were Jewish immigrants. I'm not sure if they were, or how many generations they were in France, but lived in a Jewish neighborhood. He was running scams from an early age. He was at, by age 15, he was making $50,000, well, the equivalent of $50,000 a month running scams. What he did specifically, or at least one of his many scams, was he was selling, you got to remember the dot-com bubble when everything was, oh, the internet's new. And, oh, we're going to start selling products on the internet. And like Amazon was just, you know, it just had started and companies were trying to figure out like what, you know, how do we sell our shit on the internet? I guess the internet's like the new thing. And so he would sell companies fake ads on websites that don't exist or on websites that did exist that he didn't work for. He would, pretend to sell, packages where it would, oh yeah, you want to sell your product online? Well, we're going to make sure that you can sell it on Amazon or sell it, you know, on this other, website that I guess French people use. And then he would, you know, charge them some big fee and their product would never be available on that website because he was just full of shit. This is just one of the many scams he did, but he was doing lots of scams. He was making lots of money scamming people, supporting his mom, who was a gambling addict, who would rack up huge gambling debts. He was also a big gambler, and so he would gamble away a lot of this money, and then he'd have to do more scams on the goyim in order to pay off his gambling debts. He also just, you know, he got so much money out of scamming. He was just living large, which is how he met this girl here. She saw him driving around in a Mercedes and, they hit it off because she was this, well, gold digging whore. So this is a clip of her, you know, again, AI dub describing, why they decided to develop the scam this way.
He was a hustler and a moneymaker. I've always been into luxury, a little bourgeois girl, really. But Gilbert, he was the Belleville side, yeah. That's why it clicked, the bourgeois girl and the bad boy. Gilbert was always a big spender, a high roller. He didn't play to win, he played to show off. What I really loved the most about him was his brilliant intelligence. In 2005, Gilbert had a money problem. He was racking up gambling debts. He was short 200,000 or 300,000 euros. He had a lot of thugs who wanted to shake him down. And he says to me, Shirley, I'm screwed. I need money. What am I going to do?
How am I going to get money from the goyim? I don't know what to do. And she remarked, well, on TV, you have all this terrorist stuff. And people are all worried about this terrorist stuff that's been going on.
Reports are just coming in of an explosion at Liverpool Street Station here in London.
On that old gate, I can confirm a bomb damage to train. One carriage completely wiped out. At least 9 people very seriously injured and trapped. 2 confirmed fatalities.
And there's just explosion. A big white. Appeared, and then it was just smoke everywhere in the tunnel. We were trying to close the doors because it was just smoke. We couldn't breathe.
Everyone's just asking what's happened. All we're being told is it's a major incident and the whole of the London Underground is now shut.
So everyone's freaked out by this terrorism stuff. Maybe we can play on their fears, because when you're trying to trick the goyim, it's better if they're afraid, because people, when they're afraid, they don't think rationally. They don't think rationally. I mean, look at America. They were afraid of terrorism, and now they're at war in the Middle East for some reason, because they're afraid. So fear is a good motivator if you want to get the goyim to do something, and people were afraid. So he was like, that's a great idea.
The first idea that crossed my mind was to pull off a complex scam by playing on people's deep-seated fears, posing as official anti-terror agents, and believe me, it really took off from there. It's just like dynamite.
Oh, it's the first thing that occurred to her when she watched these horrific images on TV was, Let's play on people's fear. Let's do that. Let's play on people's fear and get some money.
Gilbert's role was posing as a DJC agent looking for people's weaknesses. First of all, that's the basics. Scaring them, telling them we have a secret on them. Actually, I have a secret on you.
Yeah, see, you just have to scare people and let them know you know their secrets and blackmail them. That's, that basic Jew stuff. You know, just basic Jew stuff. So that they start doing the scam, especially after it's so successful. They get over 350,000 euros handed to them after 3 days worth of work all over the phone. And that's all it took. It took 3 days. It took 1 day cold calling and pretending to be the manager after, well, maybe another day if you add in the day that where they had to research the woman and call her mom and get details about her and stuff, right? And then call her something, I think it was over 42 times, posing as Paul. He played both characters, by the way. He played the bank president and Paul. Somehow she talked to them both back to back and didn't realize it was the same dude. Posed as Paul, called her 42 times or more over a 2 day period until he broke her down and convinced her that she was part of this big, secret agent style mission where she was going to hand over 350,000 euros to the mystery woman who ended up being this woman here, Shirley, who was driven to the cafe by Gilbert's brother, another Jew who was in on the schemes and didn't mind at all participating because, well, he's also a Jew and he was going to get his cut of the Goyim money. So they did this scam, as I said, several times, and it worked shockingly well because trusting fool Goyim, it doesn't occur to them that, people would lie. I don't know why, but, more and more white people, you're going to have to realize that high trust society thing, it's gone. It's all gone. It's all gone, guys. You don't live in that environment anymore. But anyway, here's another case. This is the actual victim describing exactly what happened. They found a guy at his lowest point. His wife had just recently committed suicide. And so they thought that he would be distracted. He wouldn't be able to focus exactly on his work because he had three children now that he was trying to raise while also working at this bank. So after they had this dossier of information about him and knew all this personal turmoil that he was going through, they called up the bank and asked to be transferred to him and ran the same scam.
I have held the position of financial director for a great many years. In March 2006, I went through something I wouldn't wish on anyone at the time, which was the death of my wife due to depression. So she committed suicide. She left me with my three children on my hands. It was a bit of a complicated time for me where I needed to trust, to find trust in human nature again. 2 weeks later, I was sitting at my office desk. Then at one point, a colleague of mine transferred a phone call over to me, claiming that it was the president himself on the line.
This is Mr. Hughes speaking. How have you been doing today?
And then he went on to explain that I should expect to receive another call from an official DGSE agent very soon. I get a call.
Yes, hello. You're aware you're calling from a secure line?
He had an incredibly calm, steady, and friendly voice. He explained that my contribution would be to initiate a wire transfer that his team would monitor to try and apprehend them the moment the funds are received.
It's called insider trading. So if you're able to handle this, we'll do it together. Otherwise, I'm big enough to contact someone else. So what I'm asking is that there be no contact between you and me. I don't know how you'll make this payment alone.
I'm starting to have some real questions about this. When he informed me, on felt me hesitate. He said, "We know who you are. We know your personal situation isn't easy right now." He talked about my wife's suicide. He talked about my children. He has information on me. He has a great deal of information about me.
I'm counting on you. Send it out pretty fast. It's very important.
I hesitate. I hesitate, but I go through with it. I'm in my role and I go for it. In total, the attempt was for a little over 10 million euros.
That's right, 10 million euros this time. 10 million euros. Now, by the way, this is just one of the scams he's running as he runs other scams. He racks up quite the haul by the end of this. But this one scam netted him 10 million euros. So, he gets the 10 million euros. Let me make it so you can see him. This is the guy himself. Look, he's part of the Replay Gang, apparently. Replay Gang Gilbert. He launders his money through China, through HSBC and some other banks. He also buys taxi companies in where? Israel, of course. And funnels some of the money through these fake taxi companies that he has in Israel. In fact, that woman that he was with before, that he did the scam with the this woman right here, she gets arrested. So she gets caught when they finally trace one of the phone calls. They find out where she lives and arrest her in France. But he flees to Israel and immediately gets with a different Shirley. This is the new Shirley that thinks very highly of herself. And before, I know from a distance, you might think, oh, she's kind of hot. No, this is her up close. just a cross-eyed Yenta right there. Trash, you know, this is Jew trash. This is like, she's a tatted up trashy Jew whore, but she's a gold digging trashy. Well, I mean, do they come any other way? She's a gold digging trashy Jew whore. The way that she meets him, in fact, is while she's in Israel. This, by the way, this stream's not going to make Israel look good. I mean, by the end of it. While he's in Israel, on the news in Israel, they talk about a French Israeli scammer who had done a recent scam. There's another one of these scams that netted 5 million euros. And so she hears this on the radio and she says to herself, I want to meet this guy. Yeah, this guy that's got 5 million at least euros. And so she goes looking for him and meets him and, you know, works her gold digger magic and ends up being a permanent fixture in his sphere. Here's, he's living the lifestyle in Israel. He's got tens of millions of dollars at this point and partying up with some cross-eyed Yenta.
He was like a guardian angel who suddenly appeared, someone who always wanted what was best for me. Gilbert had a truly unique gift. Whenever he spoke, he drew everyone into his story. He was like a master magician. He did so much for me. He spoiled me rotten. Lavish gifts, everything you could possibly want, anything you could imagine. Did you never wonder where that money came from? Or did you just not care? I honestly didn't care where it was coming from.
So he's buying her sports cars. He's buying her diamond rings and jewelry. They're partying at the most expensive clubs. And she doesn't care where the fucking money comes from. But she already knows where the money comes from. Because that's how she met him. She met him because she heard about the guy who made $5 million and decided she wanted to get that guy. So anyway. So that's his new Shirley. Her name's also Shirley. So this is Shirley number two. And they get married. There she is with like the sluttiest wedding dress I've ever seen in my entire life. There he is with his yarmulke on, of course, you know, observant Jew in Israel.
He's a refugee in Israel. He feels completely safe. So he's going to play with us a little.
You know, we each have something inside us. It either works perfectly.
So the context of this, let me back it up a little bit, is he's wanted by French authorities. And Israel is not extraditing him back to France. My guess is because at this point, he's making so much money, he's now solidly plugged into the organized crime that runs Israel. Israel is basically a hotbed of worldwide Jewry, which is just another way of saying organized crime, Jewish organized crime. And so he's plugged into the scene. He's got hundreds of millions, or not hundreds yet, tens of millions of dollars that and partying up with all the other Jewish criminals that live in Israel. And so when France asked to extradite him, they come up with all these excuses. They're like, well, I mean, it's the jurisdiction's a little hard to pinpoint because, you know, like, were the crimes really committed in France? If, like, the bank was in Luxembourg and, you know, he transfers it to a bank in China. And it's just like, I mean, whose jurisdiction is it really? I mean, I don't know. We can't really arrest him. And so the Israelis aren't really cooperating. And he's shoving their face. He's going on TV. He's doing interviews on television talking about committing crimes because he's in Israel. And what's going to happen? Nothing.
He's a refugee in Israel. He feels completely safe. So he's going to play with us a little.
You know, we each have something inside us. It either works perfectly or it simply doesn't work. Either you possess that special gift or you don't. Think of the great actors, the legendary artists, the masters and so on. Things either click into place or they never do. Well, let's just say I have a gift that actually works. So what does that really matter?
What does it matter? I'm talented. I've got a gift. I've got aura. You might say, why are all the goyim so mad? You're just jealous. You're just jealous. You're hating outside the club, they might say. You know, you just hate us because you ain't us. Yeah, I was just, you're just mad that you didn't think of it first. I have this raw talent to scam goyim, and it makes me rich, and I'm one of the best. So how can you possibly hold that against me?
The primary objective of a scammer is simply to accumulate a vast amount of wealth. As for me, money is something I have always possessed, and I will continue to have it forever. Therefore, I truly believe that, in all sincerity, it was nothing more than a game.
Yeah, Jews love money, and I'm going to get that money. I have no moral compass whatsoever, you know, because Jew. And what are you going to do about it, French? And they couldn't do anything about it. They had an international arrest warrant where if he entered certain countries, they might stop him and he could get arrested there. But he's also at this point, he's rich enough to have obviously fake passports and stuff like that. So it's a little hard to catch him. And the Israelis aren't handing him over. So he's just sitting there taunting him from on TV. And the French authorities are just like, well, what can we do?
It became a full-time job. Offices in Israel were filled with kids calling people. Hi, I'm the company president. I need a transfer. He escalated to 2 million, then 8, 15, and finally 20. It was honestly incredible.
That's right. Just like you have Indian scam call centers that try to scam old white people out of their retirement funds, he took it. It was the same thing. He just took it to a Jewish level. He had Israeli call centers, fancy facilities, staff full of people that around the clock were doing research on executives and middle management people at different financial institutions until they could try to get a dossier on someone that looked like they'd be a good target. And they would start cold calling until they could try to get a hold of someone that would actually believe that they were the CEO or you know, someone of authority that would then authorize a bank transfer, usually with a similar story. You know, it's we're trying to fight terrorism or drugs or some other, you know, thing that Jews are probably responsible for. And so in order to help us stop this this Jewish crime, participate in this Jewish crime. And he scammed big companies, you know, big companies that you wouldn't expect to have their guard down or to have security as loose as it was. Here's one of the Jews that worked at his Jewish call center in Israel running scams.
By simply impersonating a president, you could somehow extort these massive sums of money. It was all over the place and everyone was caught up in it. It felt like we had discovered the new El Dorado. And Gilbert, well, Gilbert was a natural leader. He was quite simply the mastermind behind this story. However, he was accompanied, as you might expect, by researchers who scout for companies. Then there is the singer, the one who leads the accountant along until she finally makes the transfer. Well, for the cashiers, their sole responsibility was to bring the money in and move it out to various destinations all across the globe. It was an incredibly intense experience for every one of us. We played the game without ever thinking about the risks.
Or thinking about the morality of it because we're Jews. It was like this fun time. It was like this fun job that Jews could get. Hey, you want to make some money? Oh yeah, just work at the global financial scam call center down the street that Gilbert runs. Yeah, the guy on TV just bragging about running global financial scams while the Israeli authorities do nothing. Yeah, I'll go get a job with that guy. You might make a lot of money scamming the goyim. It'll be fun. And so they did. I mean, they that's what they did. They literally had these call centers running around the clock calling, you know, and it wasn't just European countries. It was every country. You know, any country that had the ability to wire money to a, you know, account in China.
His mother used to tell him, every morning there's a sucker out there for you. You just have to find them. He doesn't necessarily see human beings in terms of their position, social status, or personality. No, it's, are you a potential sucker for me or not? So am I going to find a way to scam you or not? Whoever you are, powerful, humble, small, that's what drives him.
Oh, that's what drives him. And I'm sorry, let's back that up again. Where did he learn this from? Who was it that taught him that basically the goyim are just resources to take from, that they're not actually people, right? They're not actually people. When you look at someone, you don't think about them as like a human being. You just think about, like, how can I scam this thing, this walking pile of money?
His mother used to tell him.
His mother told him, really? His Jewish mother gave him this lesson of life.
His mother used to tell him, every morning there's a sucker out there for you. You just have to find them. He doesn't necessarily see human beings in terms of their position, social status, or personality. No, it's, are you a potential sucker for me or not? So am I going to find a way to scam you or not? Whoever you are, powerful, humble, small, that's what drives him.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And again, the whole time, Israeli authorities thumbs up their asses. I don't know. It's really hard to figure out if he's really breaking it. I mean, technically, if you look at Jewish law, he's not breaking any laws. So you're allowed to steal from the goyim. I don't know. What's the big deal? Eventually, he does get into a little bit of trouble. They do get him in custody for a little while. While he's in custody, however, he calls up a movie producer and convinces the movie producer to give him $1 million, I believe it was, for his story, for the rights to his story, and then uses that money to bail himself out of jail and goes back to Israel. So he's back in Israel again. And the French courts, the trial has already begun. And so they try him. Well, like we talked about with the other Jew, the Earth Day Jew, last stream, it's kind of a reversey kind of a thing, because in the case of the Earth Day murder Jew, they tried him in absentia, or I think it's in absentia, or basically in absence, right? They tried him in America, despite him not being present, and the French government didn't want to extradite him back to America. So this is like almost like a reverse situation where the French now are trying, instead of a murder Jew, it's a scam Jew without him being there. And I don't know, the Israelis don't want to give him to the French. Fun stuff. Anyway, I thought this was interesting. This is his Jewish lawyer. This is what his Jewish lawyer had to say about his client. This is the Jewish lawyer that defended him, despite him not being present.
Did you find it very difficult to defend him?
But you see, Basic, every single criminal defense case is inherently difficult, yet he was a truly brilliant phone operator. He was likely among the top three best in the entire business.
Perhaps he is the best of them all. At his level, he's truly a little French genius. A little French genius, one might say.
Or on criminal cases, but a little French genius.
Do you think the victims would call them geniuses?
But I truly believe that for the victims, the most terrible thing they have to live with is the overwhelming sense of shame. It's the shame of being taken in by a guy who didn't go to school when they find out, who grew up in one of the most working class neighborhoods in Paris, who just picked up a phone, and by picking up a phone, took millions from them, in quotes. Who are the suckers? The truffards, as they say. It's the victims.
The victims are just a bunch of suckers.
But they were manipulated by him.
But the victims were manipulated simply because they were such total suckers. Don't forget that. Don't flip the story around.
Don't flip the story around. It's actually the victim's fault. You see, he was just this poor Jew. French guy. They leave that part out. The Jewish lawyer doesn't mention that his Jewish client, who is evading justice in Israel. No, he's this French genius. He's this French genius that tricked, trying to do the class warfare thing, which probably works pretty well in France, right? He tricked all these rich people. He was tricking the rich people out of their money. He's like a modern day Robin Hood. He's a modern day Robin Hood, tricking the rich people. And he was just this scrappy blue collared French guy who he was a high school dropout. He had no class whatsoever, and he was able to trick the upper class people out of their millions. They're the real problem, not my client, the scammy Jew. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was amazing that he did that, but that's, I guess it makes sense. It's not that amazing, I guess, if you think about it. But we have more terror attacks. More terror attacks in Europe. By this time, especially like around 2015, you had French hostages. You had the French government more worried about how to release these hostages without paying any kind of ransom, because the official stance of the French government was, we won't pay ransom to terrorists, I guess Bush did the same sort of a thing, because that will just that'll motivate more terrorists to take more hostages and blah 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 blah. So that gives Gilbert the scammy Jew some ideas.
Welcome to Soir 3 Weekend, following the three simultaneous attacks that took place tonight.
It was a dark year for terrorism in France. There's a palpable sense of patriotism in the streets.
The very notion of terrorism and constant threat is now present everywhere. It's in the air. It's a sign of the times. There are French nationals currently being held as hostages in Syria and Mali by various terrorist groups. Fear is nothing more than a deep-seated vulnerability. And that's exactly what Gilbert Chickley loves to exploit. I believe that at some point, he realized that simply making a phone call would not be enough to convince people. He needed to make his story and his identity appear much more credible. And for that, there is truly nothing better than a visual. You have to be convincing. You have to find a ministry that's important enough, but not the president himself. Jean-Yves Le Drian serves as the Minister of Defense, the second most powerful person in the entire country, and he is in charge of the military and our national borders.
To begin with, we are currently facing a truly exceptional situation regarding the scope of our theaters of operation, the nature of our threats, and the ongoing conflicts.
Anyway, I've already sent you the photos of the person. We need a perfect likeness, crafted out of durable hard plastic. Do you understand what I need?
That's right. He decides that running his CEO scam, that's old news. People aren't going to fall for that anymore. He's been doing that for years. But now that, you know, the French are extra scared of terrorism again, thanks to Jews, what he's going to do now to, you know, I guess to upgrade his previous scam is to have a hyper-realistic latex or silicon, I think, mask created that would allow him to impersonate the Minister of Defense of France. The Minister of Defense was all over the TV at the time in France because of the hostage situation and just generally the terrorism that was going on in France and around Europe, giving updates and this sort of a thing. So he was a familiar face. Everyone had seen this guy on TV. But he wasn't too important, like he wasn't the president, you know, but he was important enough to where people would possibly believe that this guy would be contacting them. So he had a hyper-realistic mask made to make him look like the Minister of Defense of France and began making phone calls to the ultra-wealthy families and dignitaries of not just in France, but multiple countries on Skype. So it would be more believable. It wouldn't just be a phone call. He thought that, well, if I just call him up and I say I'm him, they're not going to just send me, you know, 10 million euros because of a phone call. They're going to want a little more verification than that. But if they actually see me talking to them, they might not try to check up on it. They might actually just kind of go for it. So this is one of the people that he called. It didn't work on this guy, mostly because he didn't have the money. He's a guy that runs a venue that is been used by royalty for like, you know, for weddings and things like this. And so because his name is associated with rich and famous people. The Jew's Toucan Sam nose was activated and thought, oh, he must have, you know, billions of dollars because he has like this wonderful castle type venue, this winery and everything else. But he didn't really have a whole lot of money, but he describes, you know, getting the phone call and asked to Skype with the, you know, supposed Minister of Defense of France.
Mr. Guy Petrosignac, I have a mission of the absolute utmost importance that I must entrust to you personally right now. Is it really safe for me to trust in you? Well, I say to him, yes, Mr. Minister, you can certainly put your full trust in me. He explains that there are French hostages being held in Mali, and quite naturally, a formal ransom demand has been made to the French government. We absolutely must find a way to get those hostages out of that place. However, he makes it very clear that the French government will never, under any circumstances, pay any ransoms to anyone at all. I'm going to need your help. And I'm going to need a significant amount of money. Don't you worry, you'll be reimbursed.
Don't worry, you'll be reimbursed for some reason, though we need the cash from you. By the way, so this is a screen grab of what he looked like, obviously the guy on the right, of his mask when he would make these calls. And you might say, well, that looks like shit. Like in the day of AI, right? It does look like shit. But if you think about it in the context of old people trying to Skype and talking to a guy, and maybe the connection's not great, so the bandwidth is kind of shitty, so it's kind of blocky. Like, this is 2015 that he's doing this, right? So, you know, you could have, like, and he's probably doing it from Israel too, right? So it's the connection's probably crap. So you can't clearly see, you know, that it's him or not him. But it looks close enough, right? It looks close enough. But it doesn't work on everybody. It works on a lot of people, but it doesn't work on everybody. So with the mask case, this actually made him a lot of fucking money. One instance, he got $20 million. There was a case where he pretended to be part of he needed a transfer of money to pay for some helicopters that France was selling to another country. He got at least $6.1 million from French banks by doing basically a reboot of his CEO scam. Only now it's the Minister of Defense for some reason is calling up the banks, asking for money for like some kind of stupid terrorism thing. He is also getting turned down though, and it's actually starting to alert some people because he's a little, you know, he doesn't have the personal number of a lot of these dignitaries he's trying to reach. So when he calls up the embassy asking for direct phone numbers, claiming to be this, you know, the office of the defense minister, sometimes they're suspicious because they're like, well, shouldn't the defense minister of France already have the phone number? Like, you know, why are we giving you the direct phone number to these people? But the mask thing, I mean, like I said, it worked. It worked for a lot of people, including there was this French Muslim. I don't know if it's like a Muslim sect or whatever, but he's like this French Muslim leader that has tons and tons of that Middle Eastern oil money. And he got $20 million out of him. So it did work. It did work, I'm sure the mask was paid for at the very least. So once they find this out, they call up Israel and they say, dude, this is escalated now. This could become he's now impersonating heads of state and he's tricking, people that are in governments, in foreign governments. So this has escalated from a huge financial scam to where now you're talking about diplomatic relations being fucked with. And this could, you know, potentially turn into something way worse than just a bank being out tens of millions of dollars because of your shifty little fucking Jew. And so the Israelis are like, finally, like, okay, you know, we'll look into it. And he decides to flee to Ukraine. So around 2017, he flees to Ukraine. His wife, of course, claims, oh, no, he was there for like a religious pilgrimage. Definitely not trying to evade authorities.
There is a city in Ukraine known as Uman, which holds immense significance for the Jewish pilgrims who travel there to offer their prayers at the sacred grave of Rabbi Nachman.
He wanted to travel all the way to Ukraine to perform a pilgrimage. He wanted to go say thank you. No, really.
No way. It is the absolute truth.
Yes, in Ukraine, in Uman.
He went to go on a religious trip.
Yes, he wanted to go to Uman to see the rabbi.
Duper's Delight from the Cross-Eyed Yenta. Oh, yeah, no, really. That's what it was. It was to go for the religious retreat. So anyway, they track him down in Ukraine. The Ukrainian authorities actually cooperate with the French authorities. And at this point now, I think the Israelis also kind of step in a little bit because of the seriousness of the impersonating a minister of defense. They find him, and this is footage of them arresting him here.
I'm not letting go.
The police have arrived on the scene.
Police, you need to put your hands behind your back.
Lay face down on the ground right now. Put your hands behind your back. When he gets arrested, the Ukrainian services recover 3 phones from him, and in them, all the WhatsApp threads, all the photos, the videos. And so we stumble upon something that is very, very precious for us and for the rest of the investigation.
So on his phones, he's got WhatsApp, and WhatsApp has, they go through the history and they find evidence, obviously, that shows that he has the mask, that he's the guy with the mask. Not only that, but all of this other evidence against him, all these voice notes. I mean, he wasn't very smart. I mean, I thought he was supposed to be a super genius, but apparently he just has this huge, like a criminal history all through his WhatsApp chats. But not only that, they also see that he's planning more scams. He's got future scams, the blueprints and the beginnings of in his WhatsApp messages. So they put him in Ukrainian prison. But while he's in Ukrainian prison, he's so rich and Ukraine's so corrupt that he just pays off the people that run the prison. And he's having fresh steak delivered to him. This is literally video. And he does the same thing. So like when he was on the run in Israel and the French authorities were trying to get him and he was doing TV interviews and just saying, yeah, fuck you, I'm a scammer. Who cares? You'll never get me. Well, now he has a phone. He's basically living like he would normally. Just he's technically in the prison, but he has phone access. Here he is making a video of them delivering a refrigerator for him to hold all the meat that they delivered to him.
And here's the fridge. Why don't you show them what you bought today, Gilbert?
My big purchase for today. I went out and bought a new fridge so we can finally have some ribeye steaks. Take that. A big fuck you to all those who wanted us down. We are the bosses, and we are going to stay the bosses. Bam.
We are the bosses, and we are going to stay the bosses. Fuck you, France. I just got this refrigerator delivered to me. Here's footage that he posted online when he was just getting drunk with the other inmates.
Screw the French justice system. Fuck you, and I'm not coming. And if I do come, I'll fuck you anyway.
Yeah, well, thanks a whole lot, and fuck you too.
So there you go. He's trying to play like he's the big man on campus that they're never going to get. They'll never get me. I'm super Jew. But unfortunately, they do get him. He does get extradited back to France. They briefly did release him in Ukraine because he paid off people, and then they arrested him again in a restaurant in Kiev, I believe, and then took him out to France. And this is what he had to say.
I could have easily hacked into any system. I could have breached a major political network, you name it. I am telling you, this is the absolute truth.
And again, because they looked at his phone, they looked at the WhatsApp history, they actually found he was starting to have masks or ordering masks to be made of other heads of state. And that they started to think that he might actually graduate from asking for money to fucking with countries and fucking with political systems. And who knows, maybe there's another reason why the Israeli officials didn't want to stop him.
It is a fact that there at Hafti, if Chikli had not been arrested in Ukraine to these days, we would have seen an entirely new wave of scams. Inside the phone we recovered, we found he was keeping masks of several high profile political figures.
Look at Macron, and please listen to him.
But the main thing is, we can see from the contents of this phone that he is actively attempting to acquire a mask depicting Prince Albert of Monaco.
You put it on, it stays. The plastic, it holds. You get it? Even without putting it on your head, you can see it's the prince.
So he was going to maybe try to pose as Macron, pose as the Prince of Monaco, and but they finally get him. They take him to court. They have audio experts. The way they get him is they analyze the audio from the recordings of not just the scam phone calls that they have on record, but also the scam videos of him Skyping as the defense minister. And it's clearly his voice on all of those recordings. And he is convicted. Now, I would say in a case like this where his entire life, and it really is his entire life, I think at this point he's like in his 50s. So for half a century, all this guy has done is parasitically sucked resources out of the French, well, not just the French, but I guess the whole world, because it was a scams on a global scale. He did so from the comfort of Israel for much of that, where he ran huge operations employing lots of other Israeli Jews doing the exact same thing on an industrial scale. This is the kind of guy that should be executed. This is if we're not executing this guy, who are we executing exactly? This is the kind of guy that especially should be executed. But no, he wasn't executed. Even though he stole, they don't know exactly how much, but the estimates are north of 100 million euros. And when they try to calculate in all the other scams, that the spin-off scams from his initial scam, in other words, like all the different people that he employed that would then basically set up a franchise on their own, right? They would figure out the scam and they'd go do the exact same scam on their own. The worldwide impact of his CEO scam that he developed is in the billions. Why are we not executing this guy? Well, I mean, the French don't execute anyone. I guess they got all their executing done during the French Revolution. Now they don't have the stomach for it or something, but I mean, they seem to like, they talk a big game about beheading people, right? Like, oh, yeah, we're really loosey-goosey with the guillotine. Not so much anymore now, right? Now they cry like bitches just trying to extradite someone back to America if they might face the death penalty. So we need to have the death penalty. It needs to have an express lane. It needs to have not even an express lane. It needs to have a conveyor belt. We just need to be loading like fucking scammy kikes like this on a conveyor belt that just goes directly into like a wood chipper at this point. I mean, for fuck's sake, this is insane. This is insane that this went on for as long as it did. For 50 fucking years, this guy's doing this shit. His mom, according to the journalist that interviewed him, his mom told him every day, well, there's always suckers out there, honey. There's always suckers to steal money from. Go out and steal money now. I'm going to go gamble. And you can, once you've stolen enough Goyim cash, you can maybe bail me out of my gambling debts. We need to get rid of these fucking genes. We can't have these genes floating around in the world. These people are a problem. And their behavior is genetic. And guess what? With that cross-eyed fucking gold digger Yenta, he had kids. So those genes are still going. That line is still going. We should have executed him before that even was able to happen. We should have executed him when he was making 50 grand a month when he was 15 years old, selling fake advertising space on websites that don't exist and all the other scams he was doing. He also did a scam in 2007 where he got away with $28 million in diamonds. I mean, so like, we don't even know. We don't know. I mean, that was 2007, early on in his career. He did the first CEO scam in 2005 and was making tens of millions of dollars right away with that. And by 2007, he did a a diamond scam where he got $28 million. I mean, it's well north of $100 million. He got at least, it was something like $30 to $40 million doing the mask thing. The pit. These people need to be executed. So anyway, I thought it was kind of funny that he's literally doing what people are saying. Oh, those masks don't exist. I mean, look, this was 2015. It wasn't the best mask. Where's the screenshot? I mean, it's hard to tell how bad it is because that screenshot's so bad. But it tricked people. It tricked, very high up important people. It got them, $20 million from one particular guy and tens of millions from others. So anyway, that is the story. That is the story of the Jew behind the mask, Gilbert Cheekley. And the funny thing is, so in the movie, which is also in French, the movie that they made about him, which bombed at the box office, by the way, they make him out to be some kind of fucking hero. They make him out to be some kind of like a Robin Hood. If you look at the reporting on him, like the French news reports, it's a similar thing. There's almost like a sense of humor about it. Like, oh, he's so clever. Oh, that clever little Jew, tricking our economy. Like we're talking about, when you talk about that kind of money, it's not like going out of the wallet of someone like, Elon Musk or something like that. Yeah, a lot of this stuff is like pension funds. And look, none of those people that have that kind of money, they don't just accept that, I guess I lost $10 million. No, they roll that cost onto the people like you and me. Whether they raise fees or whatever happens, those costs get passed on to you. They don't just eat those costs. And so he is stealing from just everyday people. He's ruining people, like the guy whose wife committed suicide. Obviously, he lost his job and his life like spiraled out of control, basically. I mean, he's still alive because they interviewed him, but he's basically, a shell of the man that he used to be because he got tricked by a Jew. And so he's ruining people like that. He's ruining people that that have, have to pay the costs of just, his presence in the world. They have to pay the scammy Jew tax. And we just don't need them. We just don't need these fuckers. So anyway, I just thought it was an interesting story. It kind of shows, it shows you how they operate a little bit. And like, again, it has that Israel angle. That Israel angle where they're just like, yeah, so what? So he's a scammer. Oh, he's on TV talking about scamming you? Well, nothing we can do about it. Sorry, jurisdictions are weird. Oy vey. Anyway, all right, let's take a look at Hyperchats on Entropy. Entropy is no more. Entropy is no more. Hyperchats. Oh, by the way, I have to go through the paperwork. They did finally pay me something. I have to check the paperwork, make sure it's everything. But I did, so don't worry. That saga is at least hopefully over. I heard from other people they were shorted. That's why I have to go through my paperwork and see. I have to go through everything and see. I hate that I have to do that, but I have to do that just to see. But anyway, I got the bulk. I got the bulk of what they owed. So that's that one. Anyway, what I was going to say is Hyperchats on Odyssey with Love and Division. Love and Division says, well, first of all, Love and Division says might be interesting to look into Alon Cohen, the creator of the PumpFun crypto site. He makes $3 million per day ripping off meme coin creators. I don't know much about the whole meme coin thing, but that might be worth looking into. I know that whole I don't know what to call it, an industry. I don't know what you'd call it. that whole sector or whatever is just, it's basically just criminal behavior. It's just people, it's not even gambling. Like, I would call it gambling, but it's not, it's just scam. It's just, yeah. I mean, anywhere there's scams, you're going to find Jews. So maybe I'll take a look at that directly. All right. Then we go over to Rumble. Don't worry. I'll get PowerChat or something like that set up soon. I just haven't had a chance yet. We got the Supreme Rabbi. Satan says, if you know any low IQ, low impulse control drug addicts, do not tell them that we, not white people, have all the money. Absolutely. Do not tell them about the Jews. And then the Supreme Rabbi Satan says, $1 for a retarded faggot. That's right. Well, we need to have retarded faggot here. Retarded faggot hasn't been here in a while.
Do you have that much money in your bank at home?
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Pour some out for retarded faggot. Then we got Real Starfish Prime, says Captain Stack. I've missed a few episodes, so please forgive me. Also, please say hi to my smoking hot wife, as she's been listening to you like a mental patient and catching up with old episodes. All right, well, hello to Real Starfish, or I guess Mrs. Starfish Prime. Hello, Mrs. Starfish Prime. Thank you for joining us. And yeah, there's lots of, that's the good thing about the old insomnia streams is they're all, for the most part, they're all still relevant because they're all evergreen content. It's not like I just sit there and talk about, this is what was on Tinder or on Twitter today. And then it's just, you know, the next day it's a garbage episode. You know what I mean? Like the episode of the masked Jew will still be relevant in 5 years. So you're welcome. No, thank you very much, Real Starfish Prime. Then we got, I guess, Mr. Ken, 87, says, it's rare I get to catch a live stream showing support from the great not-so-white North. Yes, the increasingly not-white North. Well, hopefully we turn this shit around. Because, yeah, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. The sharp demographic shift in Canada will be studied, I think, for years. Just the shocking change in demographics and the short period of time in which it took place. I mean, that's true of all the West, but I think Australia, it happened faster, but Canada, it happened pretty quick. Thank you very much there, Mr. Ken87. Then we got Rupert. Rupert says, replay gang here. See you next week, Professor Stack. Have a good night. Well, I appreciate that. Then we got Dagtastic says, plot twist, the voice on the other end is Indian. No, that's the funny thing. So Jews pioneered a lot of these scams, and Indians just poorly copy them. So, I mean, I guess they'll be able to more effectively copy them with AI. I think that now that AI can change their voice to sound not like a, like they're selling Slurpees and make them look a little more, not like they're selling Slurpees, you're going to get a lot of this AI Indian scam shit happening to boomers on their way out. It's going to be a bloodbath. All right. Then we got Sauced Up Saxon. Sauced Up Saxon. Sauced Up Saxon says, hi, Devin. Hope this finds you well. If you haven't already covered it, you should look into Peter Rockman. I think that's how you would say that. He was a notorious Jewish slumlord in the post-war UK who flooded London with migrants. All right, well, I'll copy that. Imagine that, right? Every single time. You don't realize how accurate that saying is until you do any kind, well, until you just research literally anything. Because it is, it's literally everything. Literally everything. It's like, what? How is it always them? How was it always them? Then we got Sauced Up Saxon again, says more details on Rockman. The British public hated his guts, and among the migrants he brought in was Michael Freitas, who later became a black nationalist terrorist. Wild case worth reading up on. All right, well, I'll check that out. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that name, probably because it's a British thing. Okay. Paste that other one there. So see that? All right. Okay. Then we got Cocaine Rim Job says, well, 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 if it isn't Norm McDiamond Devonstack. Well, I don't know. Someone sent me something about his brother or something being like a total dipshit. To be honest, I don't know how based Norm actually was. I know he was kind of based, but if you actually, I think people might read too much into it. A lot of what he was doing was jokes. But yeah, he was definitely, well, I feel like today he would be considered, just because anyone, you know, Trump and anyone to the right of Trump, and Trump's not even on the right, is considered like an extreme right wing, you know, psycho. He'd be considered a Nazi, but he was kind of centrist, I think. I mean, he leaned a little bit right, obviously. He probably would have been a MAGA guy, I would guess. All right, then we got, let's see here. Rivers of Blood. Oh, we did that one.
White fucking power.
Rivers of Blood says, update on Dugan Ashley. The VA refuses to pay for his MS treatment. His wife is asking for additional donations for medical costs. These traitors need to pay for their crimes. Why am I blanking on who that is? Let me look it up here. Okay. So this is a YouTube guy, blah, 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 blah. What happened here? This was the gun YouTube guy that you were talking about. Here we go. Oh, this, yeah. Okay. So this is the guy they're fucking. All right. Blah, 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 blah. He is facing serious federal criminal charges in the Western District of Missouri, including engaging in the business of manufacturing explosives. Okay, this is the guy you're talking about. Materials without a license and distributing information on how to make explosives. Authorities allege his videos were used to create devices in a 2025 New Orleans attack and a 2026 Missouri explosion, raising significant First Amendment debates regarding online speech. He is currently incarcerated, denied bond with a legal defense fund established by his wife to cover the estimated legal costs exceeding $100,000. Yeah, that's pretty fucked up. It is a First Amendment right to talk about how it always has been, at least prior to the anti-terrorism legislation that diversity gave us. Diversity in Jews gave us. Well, there you go. If you guys are interested in supporting his cause, you can look up Dugan Ashley. Dugan Ashley. I'm sure he's got a GoFundMe or something there. All right. Then we got Astralis, 725 nanometers.
White power.
This story is stocked full of scammy Jews, to say the least. We must be very careful, or we'll get scammed by such insufferable cretins. No, on a serious note, guys, the scam shit is out of hand. It's not just, I mean, obviously it's not just scam Jews like this. They're scammy Indians, scammy Nigerians. Like, the whole world is trying to extract what little white wealth is remaining in the world. I see it on a regular basis. Hopefully, I mean, thankfully not frequently, but I think I said like a couple months ago, I was at the store in line and I saw an old man who was like a millionaire. I'm surprised he was able to drive there. I mean, this guy was not 100% all there. Old man wearing dressed like an actual cowboy, complete with like cowboy boots and everything. I mean, he was like a cowboy. He was like an old cowboy walking in on his cell phone, looking at gift cards. And I knew exactly what the fuck was happening as soon as I saw that. And I was like, are you talking to a guy with like an Indian accent? Is he telling you to get gift cards? And I tried to, get him to not do it. I literally took his phone from him and told the Indian guy to fuck off and hung up on him and tried to explain to him, like, don't do this. This guy's scamming you. And, I don't think he was with it enough. I honestly feel like he could get, if that Indian guy called him back, he'd get him to go. I mean, he probably went back and bought those fucking gift cards when I wasn't there to stop him. This is the kind of shit that happens on a ridiculous level. I mean, there are massive call centers set up all across the world, not just in India. And there are, watch out for the old people in your family, because they will get fucked. They will spend their retirement on some dipshit shit, street shitting Indian guy in the third world. And you won't, in addition to not really getting much of an inheritance, you'll really not get an inheritance if you got to start paying for grandpa to have some kind of medical care that he doesn't have money for anymore. So watch out for the scams out there. It's just going to get worse as the internet connects us more to the third world. And as the third world just comes into our world. Now, it's not going to just be internet scams anymore. It's going to be face-to-face scam. It's going to be people just being generally dishonest when you're doing business with them. The kinds of things that you used to be able to trust people with a handshake or whatever, you're not going to be able to trust them anymore. You're going to have to start, like I said in several streams now, you have to start thinking like a criminal. Or maybe in some ways like a prisoner. I mean, that sucks, but that's kind of how it is. You got to start thinking, the high trust thing's over. The high trust thing's over. Tomahawk says, going to catch the replay. Thank you, Devin. You're a national treasure. Well, I appreciate that. Then we got P-Tail Rumbeer. I don't know how to say that. It looks like P-Tail Rum Beer. Is that P-Tail Rum Beer? I don't know. Seems like it. P-Tail Rum Beer. Says Nogs ruin companies and everything else. Hiring Nogs is a sure sign a company is going insolvent. The CEOs don't care. Keep your eyes peeled for the signs. Find a way to get the fuck out when this happens. Well, I'll tell you what. On a related note, guess who hires the most Nogs? The federal government. And the same is true, by the way. As the federal government continues to diversity higher, it will also lose the ability to function. And it also indicates that the leaders don't care, that they don't give a fuck. And it also kind of indicates that the company, if you will, is going insolvent. So yeah, that's it's an accurate observation there. Then we got Dauntless Dissident NZ says all this crap would have been avoided if World War II went the other way. Thankfully, the good guys won, right? Absolutely. According to some, words are words says, keep up the great work. Well, I appreciate that. And then we got Gravy Bear says, I am founding stock Australian. One ancestor on the First Fleet worked for the Crown, not a convict. Other early 1800s Irish and German settlers. Grandpa born in England, but 100% Anglo. Well, that's good. Now get everyone out of your country that's not. You know, like we're going to, at a certain point, people are going to have to realize these political solutions don't seem to be working. You know, and look, once you get outnumbered, then there really is no political solution. What are you going to get? You're going to get the non-whites to vote themselves out? That's not going to happen. So, yeah, something's got to be done. Something's got to give. Justice for Fathers says, I'm Canadian. This all I can afford. WFP. Well, I appreciate that. And then we got Unreconstructed Rebel says, got to catch one live. Great stream as always. Support from Dixie. Well, I appreciate that, as always. Then we got Unreconstructed Rebel again.
By fucking power!
You'll like this one. Well, I feel like that worked perfectly, Unreconstructed Rebel. Obligatory Southern Pride worldwide.
By fucking power!
All right, then we got Unreconstructed Rebel again says, is there a Spotify playlist or something for the white power music you play? Would add them to my gym playlist. No, none of them are full length. They're all just little short things. There are obviously the Pale Sirens on Spotify, and the new song, actually, the Rocket Pixie is from tonight, is also on Spotify. So that's there. All right. Well, I think that's everything, guys. Like I said, I'll get Power Chat up and running. But I appreciate the Rumble Rants and, of course, Love and Division, always keeping it real over on Odyssey. I'll be back on Wednesday at 5 o'clock with Rebecca for a episode of Outlaws. And I will be back here next Saturday at 10 o'clock for another episode of the Insomnia Stream. In the meantime, you guys have a good rest of your weekend. For Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Stack.
In our lives, we all face challenges.
Here you go.
Surprise. Happy birthday, Uncle Bill.
You did this for me?
You're my hero.
And you are the best darn niece in the whole world. Give me a hug. Oh, thank you.
Here.
I get a present. It's a card.
A special card. I made it in art class.
Well, I'm going to read this a little bit later, okay?
No, read it now. Come on, read it now. You're holding it upside down, silly. What's the matter with you? Can't read.
And it's never too late to try.